What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back to the Inside Wisconsin Show here on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Trevor Thomas, John Anderson, J.A., people that watch the show and listen on the podcast side think we're funny. Me and you, when we banter, it's pretty funny. They laugh. I like to think we are a little bit, too.
Yeah, well, there's no accounting for taste.
Got it. Well, not today. We are not the funniest people on the show today. On the show today, we're jumping right in. It's Pete Lee. He grew up in Janesville. You may have seen him on TikTok or Instagram or Reels or whatever the heck it is that you guys all watch this stuff on. At the end of the day, though, he's probably most known for his appearances on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Yep. And he's got a welcome back whenever he wants. You will love this. Get your laugh meter ready.
I will say this. Part of the reason I do the show is because I do know I'm funnier than you.
And you're certainly I know there's
at least one in the world.
Yeah. Okay.
But nobody's in the class. Between he and Charlie Baird, like, we just got Wisconsin people that are funny. So jump into Pete Lee.
Pete Lee on the Inside Wisconsin Show.
The Inside Wisconsin Show is brought to you by American Family Insurance, Aaron's Company, Blaine's Farm and Fleet, Capital Credit Union, Festival Foods, Quick Trip, Miller Lite, North Star Mohican Casino Resort, and the University of Wisconsin-Platteville.
Hey, remember to subscribe on YouTube, leave a review, smash the like button, just get with us. Wisconsin's own funny man, comedian Pete Lee on the Inside Wisconsin Show. We'll tell people how to follow you and look you up. It doesn't take much, man. Thanks for being here.
Oh, dude, I'm so excited. I'm inside my kitchen right now. you have a really great Zoom background, both of you. You know, it says something about you, and mine says that my wife is in the office on a Zoom meeting right now, and so I have to be in the kitchen.
I thought that was for us sports wise, because you know you always are up in somebody's kitchen, and then that's when people get mad. So. Obviously, the first and most important question I have is just how good is your penmanship?
it's as good as I am not in a hurry. I have total. We went to wide frame. Look at that.
You can really just you.
You can see the stack. Oh, just me. It's stackable washer dryers. My career is going great. Come see me in Madison this weekend. I have pretty good penmanship, but pretty much only if I'm not in a hurry. If I'm in a hurry, it's terrible. You guys have had people, you know, want you to sign stuff in like one of those fat Sharpie markers. There's no penmanship there. It's terrible.
So a long time ago, my good friend, John Henson, who I did Wipeout with, who is obviously in the same profession, he said to me, Johnny, all comedy starts at home. Like that's where it begins. So tell me your neighborhood, your family, was it around the table? Where did this flower start? Where was it seeded? Bloom?
Yeah, well, my family is my dad's like one of the most charismatic people that you could ever meet. He's that Wisconsin guy, you know, that like you go anywhere. Like I swear that we could be like airdropped into Baghdad and people would be like, Billy, how are you? Like he's just like, I don't know. Like he's one of the most charismatic people. And then my mom is like super smart and very funny. And my dad's always like, I think you get all this, you know, your humor from me. And I'm like, no, it's the other thing. my mom and the middle brother, I'm the youngest brother, and my family are Mensa geniuses. Like they got given this gift that they can speed read books and they are insanely smart. And I always say that my dad and my other brother and I are likable. we got this like likability thing. And which, you know, before the thing we talked about being in New York, like New Yorkers would be like, "Ah, you're really likable. I hate that." You know? So I don't know. My brothers were both really funny, and you know, it was kind of sink or swim growing up. And then I had a lot of funny friends. I think Wisconsin is just a funny place. You know, like we, I said it on the Tonight Show that your wife saw, but you know, like, I don't think that we even have an accent. I just think that we are raised by drunk adults. You know, mm-hmm. I think anytime you have that much adult drinking around you, which there's probably a therapist that's listening to this in California right now going, that is abandonment. No, it's fun. You grow up playing, pull tabs in a bar, you know, and drinking your pony beers because it's legal at the age of 12 in most counties in Wisconsin, and it's fun. Like it was just like, you know, you grow up around guys that are drinking beer that are just, you know, ripping on each other because it's a great form of male bonding, you know. I don't know, I think Wisconsin is one of the best producers of comedians in the world. And saying that, like, there are a lot of people there that I'm like, you're way funnier than me. It's just, I was insane enough to try to do this thing for a living, you know?
What was that first time like? Where did you decide that you're going to step on stage and try to make people laugh the first time?
Well, I was going to school at the University of Minnesota because I didn't get into UW-Madison because they won the Rose Bowl in 94. And I was like Madison, I don't know if people know this, but before that Rose Bowl, you could just walk up and be like mid-semester and be like, I want to go here. And they'd be like, oh, thank you. Please come, you know? And then they won that Rose Bowl. And then all of a sudden it was an Ivy League school. Like you could not get in, and you know, and a lot more money went to it. So that, you know, they hired even better professors, you know, their science labs got better, yada, yada, yada. It really did become a better school. But I got a rejection letter from them, and my safety school was the University of Minnesota. And I had never even been to Minnesota. I didn't realize it was negative 40 for 3 months with wind chill, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I went there, and luckily there's one of the strongest comedy scenes in the world there. It's there's this comedy club called Acme Comedy Club where, you know, a lot of the greats have come through there. And I just wound up, you know, I tried out an open mic. Actually, it does boil down to my college roommate was like, you're really funny. And I was like, I don't think that I'm very funny. All my friends are funny. I'm not the funny one. And he's like, no, trust me, you're funny. Well, he would like kind of doodle at like lunchtime when we'd be in the cafeteria and at dinner. And I didn't realize that like he was like writing down the funny stuff that I said, which in hindsight may be a little psycho. I don't know. But at the end of the year, he gave me that notebook and he was like, dude, you need to do comedy. You're really funny. Trust me. And I was reading through the notebook and I'm like, man, one of two things is true. Like I'm either funny or this guy's in love with me. I don't know. But it became the basis of my stand-up. And then I was so scared. I was too scared to get on stage for a long time. And then my junior year in college, I got on stage and I crushed it at Acme, you know. And the owner of the club, he came up to me and was like, hey, you're really funny. I know this is your first time, but anytime you want to go on stage, just bring new stuff and do it. And it's 26 years later, I started when I was 20 and I'm 46 now. And I just can't even believe my life. You know, it's nuts.
What is the rush that first time you stand there? Because I'm sure you feel terrified and naked. And all of a sudden people do start to laugh.
Yeah, it was. I remember, I can tell you the exact moment. Because you get up there and the lights are really bright. And then you have adrenaline, which I've now learned that adrenaline is your friend. It's like, it makes you quicker. It might make you nervous, but if you can somehow harness that Mustang, it's almost like it's kind of like a natural amphetamine, if you want to say that. You know, like it makes you quicker than you normally are when you're off camera or off stage. And I felt all the adrenaline. I get up there, the lights are bright. They're even brighter because, you know, the adrenaline makes your pupils go, you know. And it was 1998 where you were allowed to smoke in the comedy club. I wasn't smoking, but 300 people, this open mic was packed, 300 people were smoking towards me. So there's just like just smoke billowing towards you. And so the lights were bright, there's smoke, you can barely see anybody. And I felt like dizzy. And all I thought was like, I just gotta get this first joke out. And my first joke was, do you guys ever drive with no pants on? I do. I love to drive with no pants on because I can never tell if people are staring at me because like they know, or if it's because I'm driving my moped. And it's just a silly joke. And the crowd just lost it. And then I realized that there's like this gift where when the crowd's laughing, you actually have time to think of your next thing. And, you know, so it's like, all right, you have time to not have a panic attack and then think of your next thing. And then I did a bunch more jokes, and then, I had 3 minutes. They only give you 3 minutes, and I was like a minute and 15 in, and I had already gotten a bunch of laughs. It had already gone well. I was like, all right, I did the thing that I'm scared of. And I was like, I was like, how much time do I have left? And then the guy with the God mic in the back goes, you have a minute and a half left. And I was like, ah, damn it. I was really hoping this is over. And that got a big laugh. And then I go, I don't know. I go, this is my first time and I'm terrified. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, can I go? And then, yeah, my closing joke on that set was I did and I released this clip on Instagram recently of me like redoing the joke nowadays, but I had a bit about how I used to be a cashier at Menards, and you know, every 2 minutes that Ray guy would come on, you know, like the little TVs that they'd have around. And do you remember Ray from Menards, that he'd like jump into frame?
Save money at Menards.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Menards shoppers, you know, both. And he would always do this with his arm. But the joke was that I had this high school girlfriend and college girlfriend that would like come to my work, and then she'd want to like make out on my break, like in Menards. And I was always afraid that Ray was going to jump in and be like, hey, you two, why don't you get a room, or better yet, build one with quality lumber from Menards. And that punchline at the end got such a big laugh with the Menards. And I walked off stage like, oh my God, this is like maybe I got it. Like maybe. And I was like walking down the aisle of Acme Comedy Club to the back of the room. And I was like, I think I'm a comedian, which now I know is stupid. You know, like there are people that go, I've been doing it 6 months, but I'm not really a comedian. And I had done it for 3 minutes. And I was like, this is what I'm doing with my life. Like, there's no question. I was pre-med in college, and I had like a very high aptitude for the sciences. And I went into it's not like the guidance counselor department, but the whatever that is where you change your career track. I went in the next day and was like, I no longer want to medically help people. I was like, what can I do? Like, what school can I go to here? What major can I get where I can get out the fastest based upon the stuff that I've already taken? And they looked at all my classes and they're like, journalism. And so I went to the Edward R. Murrow School of Journalism, which actually helped me prepare for this, because I learned teleprompter. You know, like yeah, not only did you have to like learn to write, you know, news copy, but you know, you had to learn teleprompter. You had to like learn all the stuff in the TV control room, like the old timey one. Mm-hmm. Like I had to learn all that. It was great. I think it really helped prepare me for, you know, for this. So I don't even remember what the question was, but I answered all of them.
Did you just go ahead and I've decided laughter is the best medicine, and that's now how I can help people?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I did.
This is how I'm going to get out of there. That's astonishing that you just pop in there and in 3 minutes, you're just like, this is where it's going to go.
Yeah.
Did any of the Mensa family members go, do you realize that like only 0.023% of people who want to be comedians successfully get to be comedians or anything like that?
You literally said exactly what my mom said to me. She was like, Peter, you better graduate from college. Cause yeah, she's like, the statistics on this going well are not good. And which is funny, because at the time it didn't even hurt my feelings. Because I had like this this belief in myself that can only be described as insanity. Like looking back, I'm like, oh, that was insane. But I believed in myself. And but now those words that she said that you just echoed, they actually make me feel really good. I'm like, wow, I can't even, like, there are days where in any career that's going, you know, great or not, you're going to have a rough day. I had a really rough travel day last Friday. I had to go to Cincinnati. I had a really late show in California, and then I had to get up super early to get to, you know, to Eastern time. And I just barely slept. And then, I got to the show, and I had a cold brew coffee, you know, and then I was like, oh, I better tone this down with some whiskey. And then I was just having a bad day, and I was reminding myself, I'm like, you know, I'm so lucky, because like the statistics to even get me to a place where I'd have two sold out shows on Friday night in Cincinnati after a hard travel day are insane. Like the chance for me to have this bad day is astronomically low. You know, so I guess I don't want to be one of those corny people that, you know, uses the word gratitude or whatever, but like, yeah, that statistic makes me very grateful a lot.
Growing up in Janesville and finding that you're funny, what is it then that you learned about the Midwest, and why do people think that's funny? Because they friggin' do. It's stupid. They really do look at our life and go, is that real? Like, you really live that way?
Yeah. I didn't really, I mean, I was doing probably my same sense of humor when I lived in Minnesota, and then I moved to New York City. Cause I was like, I'm gonna go big time, and I'm gonna move to New York City is probably the best city for comedy. Almost every great comedian has lived there at one point. And, but like a lot of the comedians there, their point of view is pretty mean. It's pretty edgy. It's, and so I was like, all right, well, maybe I need to adapt to New York, cause I was a young comic and I was kind of putting on different hats. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll be edgy. And I would go up there and be edgy, and the crowd would be like, we're not buying it. And then I would like kind of tell a mean joke, and they're like, you don't feel that way. And I spent like 3 years in New York City where I would go out on the road every single weekend, and I would crush all around the country. And then I would go back on stage on Monday night in New York City and just bomb my face off. And I was like, I do not know why I can't get these people. And then finally, there were these bookers in Long Island that saw me bomb in New York City. And they're like, they own this comedy club called Governors. And they're like, yeah, we want you to come out and work our club. And I didn't know that they just saw me bomb so hard, and they would all laugh so hard at me bombing, cause they thought my material was funny, but they just thought it was fun to watch me bomb. And they brought me out to MC, and I would bomb, and I would like go home on the Long Island Railroad, just be like, God, I'm a quick comedy. I can't figure this out. And, they had me back three times, and I was like, why do you guys keep having me back? I go, I've never done well. I'm like, I'm good everywhere else. Like, just trust me. Like, I could show you video. And, they go, we have you out here cause we think you're funny, but like, it's so fun. It's so much more fun to watch you bomb. And I was like, oh, that's fun. That's so funny. And they go, you're just so nice that people hate you. And I remember that was the moment that it all clicked. I was like, wait, what? Like, I'm an alien here. Like the thing that's unusual about me is something that's so natural that comes from me, that's so radiant. And and I'm not saying that all Wisconsin people and all Midwestern people are nice, but we have like even people in Wisconsin that are like, oh, you know, I'm at work, I'm kind of a jerk. I'm like, even that is different than like a Long Island guy being like, I'm going to hurt your mother. You know, like it's just a different, we have a thing about us, you know, like even real tough guys, they just have this like, oh yeah, I don't know how to say it, but, I had to like kind of engineer my own type of comedy. And what I try to do is I'm like, well, if nice stuff is funny, then I'm going to have to kind of take the comedy formula and do the photo negative of it. And I looked at a lot of the New York comedy, and their point of view was like, I don't trust nobody. And so I was like, what if it's funny if, like, I trust everybody? Because we kind of do walk around Wisconsin like, oh, yeah, I just trust things are going to go well. I mean, we'll get, like, blind drunk and be like, I'll walk home. And, you know, and so I started developing that. And then I remember I went out to Governor's in Long Island, and I went out on stage, and I was like, hey, I've been here a bunch of times. Who's seen me? And people clapped. And I was like, can we just share? Can we laugh about something? Like, everything about who I am, you hate it, right? And they started laughing. And then I was like, yeah, you don't understand this. Like, you don't, like, this is who I am. It's where I'm from, and you hate it. And I did like 10 minutes on how much people hate it when I'm nice. And and I crushed, and I was like, oh my God, I found this. I found this thing. And I started studying comics that I thought were a little bit like me. You know, Ellen has that same kind of, like, I'm super nice point of view. And then I don't know if she's really like this, but then she got canceled because she's secretly mean or whatever.
Mean is a snake. Gary,
yeah, snake. Yeah. Gary Shandling kind of had a similar, you know, point mm-hmm. of view. And so I tried to study his structure. But yeah, I mean, it really is a thing that I just keep evolving it and trying to find what's funny about this, but it all comes from Wisconsin.
I love it. I made it through one segment without snort laughing behind the scenes. I muted myself once because I thought it was coming, but so far so good. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to be back to laugh some more with Wisconsin's own Pete Lee on the Inside Wisconsin Show.
The Inside Wisconsin Show is brought to you by American Family Insurance, Aaron's Company, Blaine's Farm and Fleet, Capital Credit Union, Festival Foods, Quick Trip, Miller Lite, North Star Mohican Casino Resort, and the University of Wisconsin-Platteville.
Hey, remember to subscribe on YouTube, leave a review, smash the like button, just get with us. J.A., I am pumped that it is Brewer season yet again. Off to
yes.
a good start, knocking on wood, all is well. So if you go to a Brewer game at AmFam Field, in the beginning part of the game, there's always a kid that yells, play ball, over the mic, right? And I never got the chance to do that when I was a kid, but if there are kids here in Wisconsin that want a chance to do that, you can. Go to festfoods.com/brewers, and it is yep. now the Festival Foods Play Ball Kit. All you have to do is nice. Text KID to yep. 78402, and there you go. You got a chance to be the Festival Foods Play Ball Kid and win 4 tickets to a Milwaukee Brewers home game. So that made me think, like, were there things that you noticed when you were a kid? You're like, oh, man, that kid's lucky. Like, here's an example, and then I'll let you go. Rhodey, our oldest son, got to be the Nicolay water boy for a Packers game where he had that water jug on his back, and he ran from the Packers tunnel to the 50-yard line.
Yeah.
Man, that he had to have it. We have it on DVD. I'll explain what a DVD is to him later. But it was a pretty cool thing. So the Festival Foods Play Ball Kit is something.
Do they still have? Didn't, awesome. A lot of places they sponsor where the kid gets to run out and get the kicking tee for the opening kickoff.
Yeah,
right. They have that guy.
So I've seen that kid, and I always think, like, please get off of there, like, hurry up and get off of there. And it's right. always when the play is over, right? It's never right after they kick it.
Yeah, usually, yeah, they don't, on the risk of an onside kick, we don't want any kids injured in the process of this when they do that, but yeah,
the play ball kid.
That's all right. I'm down with the play ball kid. I can go. That's solid. No, I never was trying to think if there's anything like that, that I'm like, ooh, that would have been fun to do. The only thing I would have really wanted to do was be one of the kids that at halftime, when they used to have the old punt, pass and kick, that would have been cool. Cause we all did it. But you did that over on the practice field is where you did the prelims. And then if you had your age group, then you went on. So, and Brad Roberts won that every year. So we never had a chance.
Yeah. Good for Brad.
Brad was great. Really, yeah. Really. He always won that. He could punt and he could pass and he could kick.
The kicking. I got it. Mm-hmm. All right. Good stuff. Festfoods.com/brewers, the Festival Foods Play Ball Kid. Go Crew. Time for another top five list here on the Inside Wisconsin Show, presented by the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, a top university in the Midwest. UW-Platteville ranks in the top 50 for best undergraduate engineering programs in the entire country and offers top-rated STEM programs in healthcare, biology, and more. Learn more at uwplatt.edu. All right, JA, for this one's top five list, it's the idea of, are there people that we know are connected to Wisconsin that we maybe didn't know are connected to Wisconsin? We call it 3 degrees of cheese. Kevin Bacon, 6 degrees. Yeah. Literally everybody in the world is connected in some way in 3 degrees or less to Wisconsin.
So, but this is more like 3 degrees of corn.
Okay.
Listen, every once in a while, I try to hone in on the old sports that I have, current event. So like the world's gone crazy for Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
At Iowa,
as they should.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And she's just finished up, called it a great career. And as you know, I don't know if I told you this. So we had her on the show one time. This was when she was a sophomore. And I was telling her about all the relatives I have in Iowa that all played women's basketball. I was thrilled for her, blah, blah, blah. We do the interview. It's great. And at the end, I go, by the way, do you know a guy named Sam Hall? And she's like, well, yeah, Sam's my classmate, was my classmate at Des Moines Dowling. And he's my next door neighbor. And I said, really? That's funny, because he's my son's roommate in college at Arkansas. So, yeah, there's the cheese is right there. It's not binding at all. Well, the cheese binds us all in some way, does it not? So in honor of Caitlin Clark, I'm going to give you the top five that I think are Iowa-connected Wisconsin sports people. Okay?
Iowa.
So like Lucas Van Ness, but he's not on the list yet because he's just starting, right? Went to Iowa. Yeah. He's been there. He's not on the list. He's not even honorable mention, but that's who I'm looking at. Okay. You know who is honorable mention? The guy who made the worst mistake in his life, Randy Duncan. He was the quarterback at Iowa. He was the number one pick in the draft in 1959. Packers number one overall pick Randy Duncan. Never played a snap for the Packers.
Why?
Went to Canada, took the money there. Packers were terrible. 2 months later, they hired Vince Lombardi.
Oh, whoopsie.
How would you like to have that one back?
Wow.
Went on, very successful law career. He came back after a couple of years, played in the AFL, not much. But, yeah, so there was old Randy Duncan. He's your honorable mention. Honorable mention. In fifth place, of course, I have three people because they were all number one pick. They were all offensive linemen. Ron Hallstrom, then Ross Verba. Right,
and
played
then,
as a rookie, that Super Bowl team that lost to Denver, and Brian Bulaga, who just typing his name out, he tore up his knee, can't play all year. Yeah, just because he was always the off-injured Brian Bulaga.
One of my favorite.
Three guys, offensive linemen, number one picks, all from the University of Iowa. Ron Hallstrom, by the way, when he first moved into town, lived across the street from us.
No, of course, there you go.
Number four, linebacker Bryce Popp. You remember him?
Yeah, he used to own the Blizzard.
And he went to UNI. He was a Northern Iowa guy. He was the most successful head coach at Green Bay Southwest.
Yeah.
Under the playoffs. So then you got Bryce Popp.
Yeah. Okay.
Number three, another Iowa guy, football player, Bobby Jeter. Come on, Hall of Famer, Bobby Jeter. How do you miss him? Great story. Went to Iowa, a defensive back, played on all of Lombardi's championship teams, or at least the three Super Bowl teams. It was kind of odd. He was drafted in 60 and didn't really come. He played in the CFL, was on the taxi. He came as a wide receiver running back, and they finally, Lombardi's like, I think you could be a decent defensive back. And there you go. Put him on the other side of Herb Adderley, and now the Packers are Super Bowl champs three times. Number two, same school, same high school as Caitlin Clark. Same high school. Dowling Catholic. By the way, Ross Verba, also Dowling Catholic. Bob Harlan.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Same high school as Caitlin Clark. He went on to, he worked for the Packers.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, did I don't know if you remember him.
Heard of
Bob him. Bob Harlan, number two. Which you're like, number two, who could be number one?
I think I have an idea.
What do you got?
Lisa Bluder?
No. No. Okay, so she was born in Appleton, but is she ranks above Bob Harlan?
She's doing pretty well for herself. I don't know.
Bob Harlan? She's better than Bob? Or Bobby Jeter with three Super Bowl rings?
That's the first time I've ever gotten one of these wrong in a top five list. I don't even know what to do.
Yeah, you've been batting 1,000. Number one is Nelly. Bucks coach Don Nelson, right? 11 years. He played basketball at Iowa.
Huh.
So it's a basketball player from Iowa, but it's not Lisa Bluter, who was the coach. And it's not.
I was close.
You were so far off. It's amazing. Not even close, but good for you. But Don Nelson, who, by the way, after coaching the Bucks, they were so good. They just ran into, Celtics teams and legendary Sixers team. But Nelly, I think right now is probably living the dream. He's 83. He's in Hawaii and he's a mogul in the cannabis industry. He's just in Hawaii growing weed.
Good for him.
God bless him. He should be tops just for that.
We're back, the Inside Wisconsin show. Trevor John and comedian Pete Lee grew up in Janesville, Wisconsin. So you mentioned 1998, Pete, and things have changed significantly in the technology category since then. I mean, I think in 98 I had a Nokia phone and I was super pumped to play Snake when I could. How much has your career had to change from when you started to the TikTok and the Instagram at Pete Lee, Pete Lee, Pete Lee, right? That's what it is. I mean, that's changed everything.
It's changed everything. I travel with a camera now that is, it's a Sony FX3. Let me see if I can pull up a picture of it on my phone and show it to you. I don't know if this is a good use of technology, showing a picture into a camera, but this is the camera that I travel with. Like, giant honking lens that you could literally photograph an eagle from 500 yards away, with this camera. And the cameras are so compact now that, this is actually like one of the cameras that Netflix uses. And so this is what I record my shows with. And then for a couple of years, I was doing all my own editing. And now I actually, with my production company, that's me and my editor, Kyle. We have meetings every day where we're editing the content for the day and we're doing all this stuff. And, so it's crazy because it used to be that like I'd go on stage, with my little audio recorder and I'd record my material and I'd go over it and stand-up comedy was my job. And now I'm lucky that I'm, 26 years into it and I write a lot on stage and I come up with ideas faster, but now stand-up seems like it's the fun thing that I do. And then video editing and content creation is my job. And I also love it. Like I love self-producing. You guys are self-producing right now. It's empowering. And, out of all the things that I've ever done on television, I never sold tickets from that kind of stuff. And now that I self-produce and I put out this content and I'm growing my social media numbers, I'm starting to sell out clubs. And so it's weird that the best thing that I've ever done in entertainment was the thing that when I started doing it, I was like, all right, I guess I'll do this because I enjoy it. It wasn't some big gig that I landed. It wasn't even the Tonight Show, which I really value that I get to do that show. It was just putting out my own stuff and making it, as high resolution as possible. I didn't think this was going to be the thing, and it's the thing,
I admire it. 'Cause I think there's a line, like every time somebody goes, how come you're not on Twitter? I'm like, 'cause if I have something to say, I can't give it away for free at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. If I need it at 11, like, how do you balance that? 'Cause like, here's this stuff. And yet I want people to come and watch, but I guess they'll come and watch you play the hits.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest. I've released a lot of my previous hits as material. And then I do a lot of crowd work and you get a lot of comments nowadays. Oh, comedians, you're just doing crowd work. Why don't you get some material? And the truth is that I'm hoping to do a Netflix special. I've been working on, I've now banked about 3 hours of material since my last special that I got to whittle down to an hour or choose my favorite, hour out of that material. But I haven't released any of that on my social media. So when people come to my shows, they'll see my old stuff. They'll see that I release crowd work clips so that I don't burn any, new material. Mm-hmm. And I'm very good with improv. And there are some shows like last weekend in Cincinnati, the first show Friday, I did a whole show where I was just feeling it. And I did do any material, and the crowd loved it. And I just was riffing. I was making fun of stuff, the crowd was like, I was like, I'm so sorry I didn't do any material. Some of you came to see me do material. I was like, I'll tell you what, if you want to come back tomorrow night, our late show isn't sold out yet. And then it was 65 out of the people in the crowd came back, and then I did material that show. And so I don't know, it's kind of a neat thing, but that's the balance, is that you have to do crowd work. You have to record it. You have to sift through it to see what the good stuff is. Mm-hmm. And then you have to not release you can't release your good stuff until you're going to get paid a lot of money for it. But the thing that you said about, you know, how you don't want to put something on Twitter for free. I put out all this stuff for free, but it's not like I don't get paid for it, because when people see it, they look you up and they want to come see you. And then I make all my money on ticket sales. It's kind of like a musician nowadays. They don't make anything off of their album, but they make everything off of touring. That's the same with these internet clips.
Jim Murray, the great writer for the LA Times for so long, he used to always say about Cincinnati and the potholes, it must be Kentucky's time to use the cement mixer. And then they would just hate him. He'd get after him all the time when he came through there. I have questions about the process, because I find it fascinating. And I've said it before, having worked with John Henson, and I always think there are people that go, oh, they can say something funny.
Mm-hmm.
That comes in a banana peel. But you could give John a banana, and he could write 10 jokes about a banana, right? Like, that's a different skill that people have. How long does it take you to, this could be funny, I could write a joke about it, I've tweaked the joke, I've now said the joke a few, like, how long does that take to come up with a bit?
It depends, I which is not the best answer, but George Carlin had this saying. He goes, how do you write a good joke? The same way you write a bad one. And so there's so much trial and error in that. And I'm lucky enough to be a headliner that has an hour where, you know, mm-hmm. intermixed throughout it, I can throw out a bunch of stuff. And, you know, like I might throw out, you know, 20 things within the set that are, you know, just, hey, this is a thing. And maybe 9 of them will be good. Well, like in baseball averages, that's great. And then the next night you can build on those ones and then throw out a few more. But the process of joke writing has changed for me over the course of the 26 years, where I used to sit down and like write the setup and then write the punchline and then go on stage and deliver that. And now I'll just be talking with my wife, who's very funny, and we'll say something and we'll kind of riff back and forth. And I'll be like, I got to write that down. And I'll maybe write a couple beats after that, but I don't write the wording out. I think it's, every joke is better if it just falls out of your face more naturally. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, you'll try it out this way and then you'll realize, oh man, no, that's not the right way at all. And then, you know, maybe 5 sets later you go, oh, I found this. And then, I used to try to write the tags to a bit. But I found that if you really listen to the crowd, have you ever just been at a dinner party and you're like, I can kind of tell, you're looking at people and you're like, I can kind of tell what they're thinking. Sometimes the crowd kind of helps you write the tags, because you're like, mm-hmm. oh, I know what you're thinking, and it's this. And then you just kind of say it as the tag, and then it hits really hard. And so I don't know. I write a lot on stage, and I write a lot by just kind of listening to the crowd's sensibility. And I guess maybe that's one of the ways that being a Wisconsin people pleaser has helped me write jokes. I'm like, what would they like?
So that said, then, we've got a winner. I've got a joke that it kills every time.
All right. I love it.
Okay. How do I make sure that doesn't turn to dust in my mouth after I tell it the 50th time?
Oh, keep it fresh? I don't know. I've had jokes that get stale. I've had jokes that you're like, oh, this is funny. And then all of a sudden you get in your head, during the first part of it, of like, oh, I don't know if this is gonna be funny or whatever, like you're your mood can kind of change and it can change the result of the joke. But I would say that the key, this is not going to sound masculine, but, there are nights that I don't have my sparkle. That's what I called it years and years ago. There's a shine that you have, you know, when you're on TV and the red light goes on, all of a sudden your face just kind of goes from here to like this, you know, and there's a sparkle. And it's the sparkle is the thing that in comedy, you go into a room and you stand up in front of 200 people that most of them had a bad day, and you got to somehow judo flip their bad day into a good day. And you do it with that, like that charisma, you know, like, hey guys, I don't care about your mood. I'm having a good time. And that's the way that I keep jokes fresh, is that I'm just kind of like genuinely excited to tell people about it. Like, you know, when you see one of your best friends and you got some juicy dirt on your friend Dave, and you can't wait to tell your friend, like, oh, dude, I was at the bar. Let me tell you what Dave did, you know? And that feeling. If you keep that, like, ooh, I can't wait to tell you this feeling, that is the thing that keeps jokes fresh and not stale.
So from Janesville, then to New York City, you're in a club in New York City. You've mentioned it a couple times. Jimmy Fallon just happens to walk up to you afterwards and go, hey, you want to go on the Tonight Show?
Yeah.
What was that night like? Because, like, if I could picture this, and I want to hear the story, Wisconsin guys and Wisconsin people in general are just like, oh, yeah, sure. Hey, let's do that, right? But then we leave wherever we were when that happened and completely freaked out. Like, oh, my God, this is incredible. So take us back. What was that like?
Yeah, well, so Jimmy Fallon came to the comedy club, which he had an apartment, or I think he still has an apartment that was like right in the neighborhood of the old Stand Comedy Club. And I have a friend, Nate Bargatze, who's, you know, one of the biggest comedians in the world. And a year before Jimmy came to see me, he just happened to come in, have a cocktail and see Nate and be like, this guy's great. I got to work with him. And he invited him on the Tonight Show. And I was like, man, I really hope that happens for me. Who knows if Jimmy's going to be out and, you know, having a beer and wanting to come by. Well, he ended up doing it. And the New York crowds are, they're too good. They won't acknowledge celebrity. They don't, you know, they don't care. Hey, famous guy, you know? And so it's a full crowd and Jimmy's over in the corner with, you know, a few of his friends, and everybody wants to acknowledge him, but nobody will. And I told this joke. I go, I never want to offend anybody. Like the other day, this guy sneezed and I want to say bless you. But instead I go, happy holidays. And Jimmy, he stands up and he claps and he goes, yes. He goes, ah, oh, I love this guy. And I was like, and the crowd roared because they could finally acknowledge that he's there now that he's been outspoken. Right. And I go, ah, thank you. Thanks, Jimmy. Sir, I don't know if I should call you sir. We're almost the same age. And then I wanted to say, I love your version of the Tonight Show, because I'm a big fan of, you know, all the different hosts of the Tonight Show historically. And I want to say I'm a big fan of your version of the Tonight Show. But I go, dude, I love your impulse control. And the crowd lost it. And he's like, thanks, man. I really don't have any impulse control. I'll tell you a story later. And then, yeah, after the show, he came up to me and he's like, hey man, he's like, why haven't we had you on the Tonight Show? And I was like, I don't know. I didn't want to tell him. It's cause, you know, the people that have worked for him that booked it just told me no repeatedly. And, you know, I don't want to throw them under the bus since I'm now going to be working with them, but yeah, I got invited onto the show, and I remember it was Cinco de Mayo, and I got a standing ovation. It was nuts. And one of the guests on the show was Gisele Bündchen, you know. And I at the end of the set, Gisele stayed to watch my thing because she was on the segment before me. And I get out to the hallway, and it's literally just Gisele standing there, and she runs up to me and grabs hands with me, and we, like two sorority sisters, jump up and down and go, yay. And she's like, you're so good. I'm so proud of you. And I'm like, what is my life right now? Like I just got a standing ovation on the Tonight Show, and I'm holding hands with Gisele Bündchen, and we're celebrating a win. It was nuts.
So you're the guy that came between Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen.
I really think that I showed her, you know, what I showed her what's possible, you know,
sure.
Because she was really slumming it, you know, with Tom, you know, he looks wise, you know, who wants a guy with a jawline like that? You know, like you gotta get a guy that eats, you know, that can, you know, you gotta get a guy with flaws.
You touched on Nate Bergazzi, and if you go back and you watch him, you go, oh wow, that guy's really good. And then you find there's this years of comedy. And like you said, you've been 26 years. The Tonight Show still is the greatest vehicle, I think, for comedians, whether it's Johnny Carson, Jay Leno, whatever.
I agree.
On average, how long does it take a comedian to become an overnight success?
Oh, man. I think it's like minimum 10 years. And comedy is one of the only art forms where there really isn't a shortcut. You know, because in like acting, you can be, you know, Ron Howard's cousin and get a role in a thing and get to the set and mess up all your lines, all except for one take. And then it makes it into the movie and people go, oh, he's famous. He's great. You know, with comedy, you know, if you suck, like, you know, you got to go up there for an hour as a headliner. If you suck, the crowd's going to hate you, you know. And so you really have to develop the skill over time and get really good. And there's all sorts of different types of crowds. It's like how, if you've never golfed a golf course before and it's got a tricky green and you've never seen that green before and you don't know how to read it. You have to see all sorts of different, you know, putting surfaces or crowds, you know, in comedy and learn that. And over time, it makes you so seasoned that you can walk into a room, hear the crowd laughing for your openers and go, I know these people. Like, I know how to tweak my stuff, you know? And, I don't know. Yeah. I don't even remember what the question was.
It was about how long it took to be an overnight success. And you said like a decade. And
it takes at least a decade because you got to see all this. It's Michael Che is one of my friends who he does the Weekend Update for Saturday Night Live. And Michael Che is one of the funniest things because Michael had been doing comedy for like a decade, basically. But in comedy, it's like there's always these guys that come along that they're like, oh, they're an instant success. They're a phenom. They're, you know, they're so talented. And so Michael Che just was like, people will be like, how long you been doing? He's like, I don't know, a year, man. And so everybody in comedy was like all the industry people, they're like, dude, he's only been doing it for a year. And he did Letterman and he killed. And he's like, and he, all of his friends knew, like we knew that he'd been doing it for longer. And, but yeah, for years they would say that. And he would just overtly tell all his friends like, yeah, that's a lie. It's funny that it's perpetuating, but yeah, nobody's that good that early on, you know.
I have one other thing I wanted to get to here before we move on, and that is we started with, you know, comedy starting at home. You mentioned about having to be more authentic because it wasn't working trying to be somebody else. You talk about personal stuff, breakups and marriages. Is there ever any hesitation have you gotten by that of like you kind of really have to give of yourself, and that can be really hard. You know, like, where are there limits on that, or are there none at all?
Yeah, there's a saying in comedy that, you know, you got to be yourself, but there's a risk in that because if you go up and you tell a joke that bombs, you can go, oh, okay, well, they didn't like me. They didn't like that joke, is what the thing was. But if you go up and you really share yourself with them and they don't like it, you're like, oh, they hate me. So there's a risk there. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, everything that I'm saying is going to, you know, be coloring everything with hindsight. But like I said, there were those years in Long Island and, you know, and in New York City where the crowds hated me. And so I didn't feel very good about that. And they really hated me. But now that I figured out, you know, how to, you know, kill everywhere. I mean, I've gone around the globe and done shows and, you know, figured out how to this thing. Now I look back on those times that weren't where the, you know, the crowd really hated me personally. I wasn't that fun. But there's also this weird thing. Like years and years ago, Colin Quinn, he said, like you got to get comfortable with the crowd being quiet. You know, you got to get comfortable with the crowd not liking you. And I was always like, that's the opposite. I don't want the crowd to be quiet. I don't want the crowd to not like me. That's stupid. That's the opposite of comedy. But now I finally realized what he's talking about is, like, I actually find it funny if I throw an idea out there and everybody doesn't like it. Like, I think that's hilarious that my brain was like, this is going to go so well. And then the whole crowd is like, no, I think that's hilarious. So like now, instead of feeling hurt if the crowd doesn't like a bit or doesn't like something that I shared about myself, I'm like, oh God, that is so funny to me. Like there's a demented, sick part of me, like a self-deprecating, roasting of myself part of me that enjoys that and enjoys the silence in a way of like, almost like, I don't know, have you ever had a best friend give a speech at a wedding and they go up there and they just suck? And like you and your five best friends are just going, oh my God, Kevin sucks. And you're howling in the corner. That's kind of what I'm doing in my own head. If I ever throw something out there that sucks, like I'm like my own best friend that's going, oh my God, you suck right now. That's funny.
Isn't that all of them? I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we're back in a minute to wrap it up with comedian Pete Lee, Wisconsin Zone, and coming home here in a little bit. We'll talk about that next. Pete Lee on the Inside Wisconsin Show.
The Inside Wisconsin Show is brought to you by American Family Insurance, Aaron's Company, Blaine's Farm and Fleet, Capital Credit Union, Festival Foods, Quick Trip, Miller Lite, North Star Mohican Casino Resort, and the University of Wisconsin-Platteville.
Hey, remember to subscribe on YouTube, leave a review, smash the like button, just get with us. JA, I feel like I've arrived with my friend group. They now have Miller Lite ready for me at their house. They know I'm not touching any other brand, no other can. They have it in stock, and I wonder,
we come to this, that feels like that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, it should be. It should be, but it's not always. I used to have Miller Lite Will Travel, and I'd take it along with me to buddies' houses, but it has now come to fruition that no matter where I go, maybe it's because of the Inside Wisconsin Show. Maybe they see us talking about Miller Lite or see it here. Damn it, I'm going to get there on the set. I'm not a weather guy. But at the end of the day, I guess I just appreciate it. I mean, I'd like to think that I take care of friends' needs in the beverage category when they come over. And now I show up at other people's houses and they just know better than to hand me anything else but a Miller Lite. I'm just grateful. Maybe that's the message. I'm grateful.
All right. Well, I'm going to tell you a sad story then.
Good.
I go off to the Texas relays and in the fridge outside, I don't have an exact count, but there was 8 to 10 Miller Lites. Okay. What I do know is there were more than 4 that were in there when I returned. And all that happened was book club. Now, what kind of ladies raid the beer fridge on book club?
Nice.
Like, wait a minute, there's a whole bottle of Chardonnay in there and some others. I'm like, I thought you had this or the new seltzers, the hard seltzers, whole stuff. You know, that's all sitting in there. And so I don't know which ones. Oh, I'll get to the bottom of it. But yeah, some ladies just tapped in and they just jumped on and just freely didn't even ask, you know, and I'm all for sharing, but that's not where I thought that the supply would be depleted was that at my wife's book club that they came after my Miller Lights.
They're onto it. They know too. Good for them. We'll replant.
No, bad for me. How about a little empathy for your partner?
Sorry. I bet I do. Bots. I'll replenish it. I'll send you some. Miller Lite, great taste, 96 calories. Go to MillerLite.com/InsideWisconsin to find delivery options near you, or you can pick up some Miller Lite pretty much anywhere they sell beer. Tastes like Miller time. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. You know, now that the winter time is over, I'll just go on that website. I'm going to go to MillerLite.com/InsideWisconsin. I'm going to see where I can get a case of Miller Lite delivered to your door. We'll make it right. No more book clubs.
Never thought I blame Reese Witherspoon.
All right, we're back to wrap it up with Pete Lee, comedian Trevor John. We're not the comedians. Pete's the comedian. Two for me, and then on to the lightning round. So there's a really funny dude that talks about self-deprecating all the time here in Wisconsin. His name is Bob Uecker, and he's absolutely hilarious and probably the best at it. You ever met Bob?
I've never met Bob, but I love Bob. I was listening to the baseball playoffs last year, and I don't know if you guys know this, but like he doesn't do every inning anymore. Like he kind of comes in whatever inning he wants to. And then there's another guy that just he tag teams in. And I love that. I love that Bob is so he's such a great broadcaster that he's like, yeah, let me do the third. And then he's like, I'm gonna come back for the seventh. I love that man. I mean, think about his career. He just decided that he wanted to do a sitcom, and he did Mr. Belvedere back in the day, which was a great sitcom. And I don't know. I love that man. I'd love to meet him. If he wants to come out to my shows in Madison this weekend, Comedy on State, Thursday through Saturday.
If you have a cell phone number, shoot him a text, but we do not. That's for sure.
Yeah. Bob Uecker would just be in the back. And the setup. And the punch.
Swing and a miss.
Yeah. I'll be back for minutes 20 through 30.
So last one for me. At some point you had to realize like, wow, this is working out. I get it. And you've made it. Is there a venue in Wisconsin that if you said, man, if I could go home and sell the Fiserv Forum out or the Pabst in Milwaukee or the Kohl Center, you ever thought about that on what it would mean to come home and have everybody know who you are?
Oh yeah. I mean, I would love to do so Comedy on State that I'm at this weekend. They, I believe they still own the Orpheum Theater next door. And, I really want to do that one because all the great comics that have done Comedy on State, like they also do the Orpheum. That would be a real big one. The Pabst Theater in Milwaukee. I'd love to do that one. So I have a friend named Gabriel Iglesias that we have the same manager, and he sold out Dodger Stadium and did his Netflix special at Dodger Stadium, and he sold it out twice. And like, I'm on the verge of selling out Comedy on State, which seats 250 people. And I'm like, dude, I'm winning, you know, like, I was joking around with my manager after it was after the second, Dodger Stadium show. I was like, all right. I was like, 10 years from now, we're shooting my special at Lambeau Field, you know, and which just seats way too many people. But I'm gonna put out the dumbest answer. I'm gonna go, yeah, I want to sell out Lambeau Field.
I'll be there.
I've said this on the show before. I saw Bob Hope at Lambeau Field.
What? Oh my God! No! Oh my! That's what.
And it rained, and so they delayed and delayed and delayed. I was probably seven. I don't know. I was with my grandfather or my dad and everybody, and we waited and waited. But, yeah, I saw Bob Hope play Lambeau Field.
That sentence just broke my brain. I can't even believe that. That's – wow. That's wow. True. So
yeah, it's crazy.
So comedy has been done at Lambeau Field.
But just by Bob Hope, right? So it's not – you know, just it's kind of a –
anybody. Yeah, just by one of the greatest comedians of all times, and you know, person that just donated his time to people, you know, who are at war with PTSD. Just that guy, you know, one of the greats.
Yeah.
Wow. Crazy. Lambeau Field is like it's one of my favorite places. Like I'll just be driving through Wisconsin. I love that you can just go there, you know, and either go in the pro shop, you can go there while it's closed. I love that when the planes fly into Green Bay, like I don't even think it should be a part of the flight path that they just circle Lambeau. They kind of arc the wing and just like, hey, do you want to look right into the stadium? And that's one of the greatest places on earth.
So, yeah, well, that's a true thing. We'll have to look up exactly when it was. But it happened. Bob Hope played Lambeau Field. So, all right, I'm going to run through a bunch of these. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so you do a great Wisconsin accent because it's real, but obviously sometimes it gets thicker. My wife's from Oklahoma. Yeah. After about four tequila shots, she's in the right range. Like, how many drinks get you in the right Wisconsin accent?
I'd say that I'm about three fingers of whiskey away from just speaking Wisconsin. I get told all the time that when I go on stage, I like turn on the Wisconsin accent. And I think right now I have a Wisconsin accent, maybe because I'm talking to you guys, but I think maybe it's just the microphone. It literally gets louder. So it sounds more pronounced.
Opening acts, harder to be one or find one?
Oh, find one. There are comics that are scared to follow funny people, that they bring somebody on the road that bombs in front of them. Well, mm-hmm. I don't like that, because I want to follow somebody that I'm afraid of, that that drives me to be funnier. And so every opening act that I choose to go in front of me, they have to be shooting flamethrowers. And that's hard to find, because you got to find a guy that should be headlining that maybe doesn't have the right credit, hasn't gotten the right break yet. His internet mm-hmm. videos has, or her internet videos haven't broken yet, but they're just shooting flamethrowers in the crowd. Because I don't know, like, if I was an audience member, I wouldn't want to go to a show where you go up there and the MC sucks, and then the feature sucks, and then the good guy, you go, oh, well, they saved the show. You know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's also better for the comedy club if people decide to drink more if the feature is funny. They literally, the drink sales go up if you bring somebody funny. So I don't know. I would say harder to find an opening act.
All right. You get one ticket, Packers, Brewers, or Bucks.
I'm going Packers. I do love the Brewers. I do love the Bucks. I mean, they just clinched the playoffs. I still don't know how to pronounce Anacapetem, but I don't know how you do it when you have to say all these names. I would say Packers. I've been to Brewers games. I've been to Bucks games, and there's just nothing like Lambeau Field.
Okay. Duck hunting or deer hunting?
I'd say deer hunting. I gotta be honest, I've fished a lot, but I've never been hunting for either. But I've also done, this is not a weird thing to say, I love guns. I own guns. I go target shooting all the time. I actually belong to a skeet shooting range. So maybe I should say duck hunting, but I love shooting guns. I've never shot it at anything alive.
I looked at your recent places that you've gone. Tulsa, I used to live there. Phoenix, I used to live there. Austin, I was just there for the Texas Relays. Mohican Sun, I'm in Connecticut. Albuquerque, in February, I was there for the track. Why are you stalking me?
This was my long game. Was I was like, I'm gonna follow him so long that he comes to me. That's what I'm gonna
do.
By the way, I'm you guys know Bert Kreischer, right?
Yeah.
He's a really funny comedian, takes his shirt off on stage, one of the greatest comedians working today. Anyway, long story short, I'm going to be the last weekend in April, I am going to be at Mohegan Sun doing the arena with him in Uncasville or whatever. Yeah. I don't know if you're around April 26th, I'll get you tickets if you want to come out to the arena. And I'm also sure, you know, Bert's a huge sports fan. I'm sure that if I brought you backstage, he'd freak out.
This is me just looking at my calendar right now. Let's see, colonoscopy. No, that's the day. But I'm on a plane to Missouri. Damn it.
Oh, dang it.
How hard would it be for you guys to just switch all that to the 24th?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
This goes right. Is it okay to tell a joke about snowblower accidents or heart attacks while shoveling?
Oh my God, they're both funny. I mean, the snowblower.
It's not just me.
Snowblower accidents. I mean, that kind of gives you a Fargo wood chipper visual. Heart attacks while shoveling. I mean, I don't mean to joke around. My dad, he's alive. I want to let you know that. But like, just keeps having heart attacks, like the De Bears sketch. And like every time that I'm home, he's like, oh, let's go get some cheese curds. And I'm like, Dad, I don't know. And he's like, you know, like Like he's like, I'm 3-0. So I don't know. Heart attack, I guess, pretty funny.
Over and under on the number of old fashions I've had in my life, if I set it at 1,218.
Oh, I'd go over. I'd go over.
This is going to get me thrown off the show. It's the under. I've had two.
Whoa.
Had the first one wasn't for me. Had the second one just to make sure it wasn't for me.
Oh, and are you talking brandy old fashions or whiskey old fashions?
I've tried. The first one was brandy. The second one I tried with Canadian Club. Neither one of them took.
I wouldn't make it with Canadian Club. Oh, God. All right. If we ever get to meet each other in person, I am going to make you my signature old fashioned, and it can be number three, and you can throw it in the road. So I love Macallan Scotch, and you're not supposed to make an old fashioned with Scotch, but there's something about Macallan is brewed in sherry wine cask, so it makes it a little sweeter. So you use instead of simple syrup, you use honey simple syrup. You shake honey and simple syrup and then you use orange bitters, and then you garnish. Mm-hmm. You still, you know, use one of those Luxardo cherries, and you garnish it with an orange peel. And there's something about this, like especially in the summertime, that this drink tastes so good. And it does have the qualities of a traditional fashioned, and it does have a little bit of the cherry juice in it, but it is so good. I swear you'd love it.
All right, so that's something else I'm going to do on April 24th. Besides see you at the Comedy Club, which is down there in Uncasville, which will be fantastic. Give me the correct pronunciation of the contraction for could not. Is it couldn't or couldn't?
All right, now you're getting me to say a bad word.
I didn't want to, but I did. It's the latter,
not the former. Yeah, right. You said it absolutely right. Put it in a bag.
I have two more. One, give me a joke that you thought was kind of lukewarm and you told it and it just destroyed. And you were like,
oh man. All right. So I didn't know about this one. I did it on the Last Tonight Show, and I always write the week of, and I'll just throw something in the set that it kind of excites me that I'm like, I think this is funny. I don't know if the crowd's going to think this is funny. I was talking about how much I love my wife. I talk about like that my wife is my second wife, and I do a couple of jokes about that, and then I start to go into a segment where I'm gonna say like I really love all these things about my wife, and the joke that I didn't know if it was gonna go well and it destroyed and I love this one, and. And the crowd loved it, and I was so happy that my gut instinct was like, that was going to be a funny joke, but I didn't know, you know.
I love this one. I literally played that for Amanda this morning, J.A. I was like, you have to watch this. This is who we're chatting with today.
So here's the thing, though. Right now, I only have this one, so I can't compare the joke yet in my own personal life yet, but you know, we'll see where it is. Finally, you are more likely to steal a hand towel from a hotel or commit a murder.
Definitely steal a hand towel from a hotel. But let me tell you the secret. You get charged for the ones in the room. They don't know what you took from the gym. They don't know that you took the same towel that's the medium-sized towel in the hotel room. All those are at the gym, and they're unlimited.
That's a man who's been on the road sometime for sure. Pete, thank you so much. You're an absolute hoot. I love the fact that you're just an overnight success, like you said, in at least 10 years. We see you stand up, right? But I know how all comedians work because of some of the friends I have, whether it's writing for shows or doing like there's way more that you do than when you're not there for the mic, and the success has been great. Hopefully your laundry gets done now that you're finished with us, and you can put in a dryer sheet and fold that up. But thanks so much for the time. It's really been a pleasure. It's great. Thank you.
You guys, thank you so much. And Trevor, you know, yeah, we talked in the break. You guaranteed me you'd come on Thursday to a show. Yep. You guaranteed me that, and you said you said you'd bring Amanda. And yeah, I really hope that I get to make that old fashioned for you, and ask you all the annoying SportsCenter questions that everybody asks you at a party. That's what I want to do.
All my friends are accountants, and we just talk about straight line depreciation. Nobody even brings it up. It's great.
Oh my God, I love that.
Thanks, Pete.
Thank you guys so much.
My mouth hurts. I can't smile anymore. Literally, my cheeks hurt from laughing and smiling. Yeah. Pete Lee, funny dude. Wow.
Really funny. And as you kind of touched on, like, it just seems effortless, right? Like, the guy, you know, people, look at me. Like, sometimes I'm working hard for the laugh. He just says stuff, and it's funny. It's good to know, though, that somewhere people apparently just think our lifestyle is funny, how we operate. Yeah. Like, they're just funny. So, you know. Yeah, good dude.
I was gonna say, I love that he was bombing him. What'd you say? Sorry,
I said, I've yet to meet a comedian I don't like.
Yeah, how funny is it that he was bombing in New York for being too nice and then he owned it and they all thought it was really funny? That's fantastic.
Yeah, God bless.
That's Wisconsin through and through. All right, JA, back to the tales of John Wisconsin, another episode of your childhood. I mean, that's literally what it is. We should make this into an episode.
So we're going to stay on theme since we've had this wonderful professional comedian. And I'm going to tell you about the comedians I saw as a kid. This one story, they're kind of tied together. So my folks, back when they had the Carlton Celebrity Room in Green Bay, right? It was right out there by old Green Bay Southwest, just off 41, the Carlton Celebrity Room. And they had people come through all the time. And my folks had season tickets. So sometimes you'd get the Mills Brothers. Sometimes you'd get Dionne Warwick. Sometimes you'd get David Brenner, the great comedian David Brenner.
Okay.
And so my folks, and they had these season tickets with Roger and Kathy Grabowski, his business partner, and because it's Wisconsin, right? Neighbors to Harlan's. And so they take me and they take their youngest son, Bob, who's now he took over his dad's business, successful builder there in Green Bay. If you guys need a house in Green Bay, go see Grabowski Custom Home Builders. Anyway, so my folks and their friends and Bob, there's six of us, and we go see David Brenner. And he's just fall down funny, right? I'd never seen a professional comedian, and in Green Bay, never one that was Jewish. So he'd say funny things that you're like, oh my gosh, that's funny. I had no idea. And I can still see him talking. He told one joke that I still think is really funny. He'd lost his keys. And he said, you know, and then you do that and you say to somebody, I know when I find these, they'll be in the last place I look. Because that's true. Who continues to look after they found them? So we have this great time. It's really funny. And we're like, oh, that's awesome. So then George Carlin comes to town.
Oh, man.
And my folks go, well, this will be great. How about we take the boys again to see George Carlin?
Oh.
And George Carlin is doing a great job and he's making everybody laugh. And then he busts out the seven words that you can't say on TV, which, as we all know, are shit.
That's just going to be one long bleep.
And seeing my folks, the blood rush out of their faces. That they had, I don't know that my dad ever cursed, and my mom only if she hit her thumb with a hammer, but they certainly never said. And so there's just silence over the table. He finishes up. The place is uproariously laughing, except for table 13 or whatever we're at. And then it was just a very silent car ride home. And then 3 years later, whenever he would pop up on TV or he'd be on the Letterman or on the Tonight Show, it just would be like click. And I'm like, he said he can't say those words on TV. He's not going to say them anymore. But it was damaged beyond belief in my house. And so from then on, you know, we didn't talk about George Carlin. And as brilliant as he was, as genius as he was, as thoughtful as he was, Those seven words, which I've said them twice, I don't have to get.
Yeah, we got it. Yep.
Yeah, that kind of poisoned the well from there on. Oh, and after that, if we went to the Carlton Celebrity Room and there was I don't remember that we actually went back. I think I did go see the Mills Brothers, and that was about it. But it was, yeah. So that was just in honor of Pete Lee and comedians. That was that was one. I was probably 12, right? Like, so it's not. Yeah, I shouldn't be hearing those words.
Yeah.
Had heard them, but shouldn't be seeing them. You know, my folks didn't know they were going to pay somebody to hear those words in front of their kids.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my friggin' face hurts, John. Oh,
yeah.
God, that's funny. George Carlin. Mm-hmm.
And then Bob and I, right, the next day at school or whatever, just like, I can't believe we did that. That was unbelievable, right? Like, we're all just, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Yep. All right. Well, this is a funny episode.
Some things a family shouldn't share.
Right. Like George Carlin. Just don't share that.
Or that part of it.
Crazy. All right. Onward. We are busting out of here. We are off and running in season 4 of the Inside Wisconsin Show. Our thanks to Pete Lee for coming on today. And I believe this is the first time we're going to have a Deeper Roots piece here in season 4.
Good.
The segue of a comedy show to this Deeper Roots piece, there's just no way to do it. So I'm going to just set this up, and then we're going to jump in.
It is a
really cool story out of the Baraboo area. There is a gentleman that bought a farm, and he's doing this in honor of his mother. They take care of dogs at this place called Jane's Dog's Journey Home. You wouldn't believe it unless I said it, and you're about to see it. It's a heart-touching, heartfelt story about how a mom and her son had this love for dogs, and now he's living her legacy on and just giving these dogs. It is like a palace for dogs. Think of it as a nursing home for dogs on steroids, and it doesn't cost a dime. The state doesn't even take all your money in your checkbook when you're done. We'll get to it. Blaine's Farm and Fleet, Deeper Roots, the dog capital of the world.
Did your mother have the vision for what this was, or did you honestly just design this whole thing based off of how much you saw her love her dog?
She didn't say buy a farm and turn it into this. She said, I want to do something for older animals at end of life. Everything else just kind of took on a life of its own.
Farmers, brewers, hunters, packers, badgers, cheeseheads, neighbors. No matter what name we go by, we are bound together by our roots. These are the people, the stories, and the statriotism from inside Wisconsin. Welcome to Deeper Roots with Blaine's Farm and Fleet.
Our travels on Deeper Roots has brought us to Baraboo, Wisconsin. Look at the rolling hills. My guy Larry, we are at Jane's Journey Home for Dogs. Am I going to cry this episode, Larry?
A good chance you will shed tears.
Okay, I'm prepared for that. You guys got to be prepared for that. Tell me, what was the inspiration for you and your family to create this older dog sanctuary?
Well, that story does start with my mother. Found that she had terminal cancer about 10 years ago. At that point, she had about 9 months left. We talked quite a bit about what she wanted to leave as a memorial. Dogs were just a big part of her life. Her concern was older dogs. She experienced in the California area a lot of dogs being prematurely euthanized. She was quite upset, actually, that there was time frames that would be put on a dog that if it's not adopted within a certain period of time in these shelters, that they would be put down. So that was part of the story, and you know, that's what she shared with me at the end, was that she wanted to do something to have that not happen.
Why do old dogs need a place like this?
To some extent, they're forgotten. A lot of the dogs that we get, because they're older, they have various reasons why they're ending up in shelters. And they're finding that the shelters can't necessarily adopt them out.
How have you found that this serves a common belief in regards to those in the community and even people at like humane societies or other places where they too saw the need for this?
The humane societies get it. They understand this is an issue. One of the questions I was always getting, who would ever give up their dog? to a facility like this. What we're finding is that people don't want to give up their dog, but they find themselves in situations where they have to.
How do people find out about this, and what is the best way you serve them?
When we had our grand opening, we had a couple hundred people show up. We got news coverage. We got a lot of social media coverage. I think we kind of tapped a chord. There's not a lot of this available. It was new to people, and they found it was important. You know, they're volunteering, they're coming out, they're donating. Almost everything you see is donated.
All right, let's go take a tour and
sure.
and meet these awesome older dogs.
Hi guys, can I come in? I won't step on you, you're a little fella.
Listen to the music in here.
It's peaceful, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, this is about as peaceful as it gets. This is the sanctuary.
So this is where we keep the dogs, and this is a renovated lower level barn. We just had dozens of volunteers over about a 6 month period that came together. It's really set up to be like a home. These dogs are not penned up, they roam freely within the space.
What is the average age of the dogs?
I think our oldest one might be this guy here. He's about 15. We've had them as young as 10. And you can see they just get real comfortable within the space.
All they want is attention. What? And this guy's like, more attention for me, please.
Yeah.
What support, if you were to look at the needs of your facility here at Jane's, what would they be?
Certainly volunteerism. We've had great success. We've got almost 90 volunteers wow. that spend between 2 to 4 hours a week here. Certainly donations and so forth off our website are definitely appreciated. The organization is free. So we don't charge to take these dogs in.
No.
We're run 100% on donations.
Tell me about the mural behind us, Larry.
Well, this was another one of those donations. We had two artists. They volunteered their time to come in and paint this mural. This was a mural, kind of a piece of artwork. It's similar to our logo. It has a lot of memorabilia here to Jane as well and her own dogs. So this was real important to us.
Rachel Leitzinger, the executive director of Jane's Journey Home for Dogs. You know every single dog here. They know you. There's 11 total right now.
Yeah.
You know all their names, all their personalities. Who's this guy right here?
This is Noah.
That's a boy.
Hi.
So Noah's 13 years old. He's actually part of a group of three that came here together that had spent their entire lives together. Came from a humane society in Rockford. For the first time in years, the shelter was actually considering euthanizing for space because they were so overpopulated. So they reached out to us and we brought not only Noah, but his brothers Gully and Percy here as well.
How old's Gizmo?
Gizmo's about 12 years old or so. Gizmo's owner passed away and there was no immediate family to take him.
What is the breed?
He's a Terrier Chihuahua.
Terrier Chihuahua. So this guy's gonna live to like 22.
He might. A lot of these dogs, their owners passed away or had medical conditions of their own, could no longer care for them. The dogs also have medical conditions and so aren't considered adoption candidates.
You're not looking for these dogs to be adopted.
If they're considered an adoption candidate, there's humane societies and rescues for that are better equipped. When we take dogs in, we plan on taking care of them for the remainder of their lives.
Do any of these dogs hide? I feel like this is a place where you could play a mean game of hide and seek.
Sometimes, if they don't want to be around things, maybe they'll go outside. This is their house, so they feel most comfortable on the beds.
Some of them are blending in with the decor. So there's one that... Yeah. Is that just one over there that's not so with everybody else?
That's Sasha. She's actually our newest addition. Sasha is blind, deaf, and has no teeth. She's just acclimating to the sanctuary. So that's part of our process is when we bring them in here, they get a smaller space so they can get used to that first. And then that we incorporate them more with the other dogs.
What's this one?
That is Bosley. Bosley has been here the longest. He actually was scheduled for euthanasia. His owner had gone into a nursing home. The nursing home reached out to us through another rescue and said, hey, do you think you could help him? And he's been here over a year now. This is Percy. So he's Percy. One of our three amigos. Percy came here with Gully and Noah. Percy's the equivalent of a 95-year-old man.
I wouldn't get up if I was him either.
Cappy is a corgi. She was actually born with deformities to all four of her limbs. Cappy's on 6 different pain medications.
Is it hard on you when the dogs leave here?
It's hard, but I think it's important to provide them a dignified end. I'm the lucky one. I get to spend all this time with them. I get to receive all of their love and affection, and I get to be there. at the end, telling them how much they're loved and how much I've appreciated getting to know them.
Larry, if you could pinpoint the most important thing that a geriatric dog needs.
It's attention. They bring the love, you bring the attention, it's gonna work out. They will just eat it up. Spending time with them is as important as anything.
We understand that the mission of this is to support them. But how often do you see volunteers being supported by them?
That's just a side benefit. The volunteers, I think, you know, they come here regularly. They like to spend time with the dogs. They connect with the dogs. They know their names. They know their personalities. I think one of the surprises that I found out of this whole thing was families. Parents were bringing their kids here, and they're spending time. They're watching movies together with all the dogs around them and so forth. It's really become as beneficial to the people as it has to the dogs.
What's next for Jane's Journey Home for Dogs?
In the Baraboo area, there's so much going on around this site. We see this as being a component of visiting the area. People can come here, they can spend time, they can be in the visitor center, they can go through the miles of trails that we have through the woods and the fields here. We want this to be a component of that visit to the community.
Your mom's name was Jane. That's where Jane's Journey Home for you get comfortable. You just get comfortable. If she could see this, knowing that she didn't see this before she passed.
Mm-hmm.
Any idea what she'd say?
I have to think that she would think far exceeds her expectations. I think the nice thing about this is that her gift should go on many, many years, and her memory will be part of this for a long time.
To know that a place like this exists for the family pet, I call it God's work. You're doing God's work. Thanks for doing it.
Well, thank
I really
you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to hang out with my little Gizmo buddy here.
I think if you just look at Gizmo's face, you can tell what gift you're giving him right now just by the attention. You can see how calm he is. You know, that's what we're trying to do for these pets.
This is...
Floyd.
Floyd.
Yeah.
And that's...
Murphy.
I'm failing this test. You ever heard of the got your hand stuck in a cookie jar? I feel like the seat I'm sitting in just got wet. And it's not me. That's a great spot. Jane's Journey Home for Dogs. Jane's Journey Home for Dogs.
It kind of rolls off your tongue. It
rolls off your tongue, not mine, apparently. Eventually, you keep them all straight.
All the time. I never mess it up.
Are you fibbing? You're fibbing.
A little bit.
Gizmo.
This is Gizmo. Don't put him underwater. Hear that? You can't go swimming or you'll take over the world.
There we go. Another positive episode of Deeper Roots with Blaine's Farm and Fleet. Beautiful Baraboo, Wisconsin. Man, was it fun to hang out with those dogs. Our thanks go out to Rachel, Larry, and ultimately Larry's mother, Jane, for bringing together such an amazing, restful home for senior dogs with nowhere else to go except for there. That's their home. If you have a Deeper Roots story of your own, let us know. Just head to farmandfleet.com/deeperroots and fill out the form for your chance to become our next guest. It's farmandfleet.com/deeperroots. Be sure to like, subscribe, and let us know what you loved about the episode in the comments below. If you're watching here on YouTube and if you're listening on the podcast side, go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. We're grateful for you. All right, we'll see you.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Remember to subscribe on YouTube, leave a review, smash the like button. Just get with us.
The Inside Wisconsin Show is brought to you by American Family Insurance, Aaron's Company, Blaine's Farm and Fleet, Capital Credit Union, Festival Foods, Quick Trip, Miller Lite, North Star Mohican Casino Resort, and the University of Wisconsin-Platteville.
And sit down.